Hello, everybody, and welcome to the War Room. This one is for the UFC 264 main event, of course. Do I even need to tell you who it is? It's the trilogy match between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. Okay, so much to talk about. Right, so let's talk about their very first fight. So McGregor comes out confident, long, wide stance, throws a couple of kicks, sweeps Poirier back up against the fence. A couple of times, Poirier tries to push back into the center, step in through with overhands. And, you know, but generally, he's quite cautious. You know, he disengages with McGregor. He doesn't get really involved too much. He's moving laterally and he's kicking his legs. That was the first fight. There was a point, though, where McGregor steps forward and he drops his hands and he, like, kind of calls Poirier in, and Poirier engages. He steps in, throws a couple of shots, and then there's a little brief exchange where McGregor throws a few lazy punches and Poirier pushes his way back into the center, and then they meet and they both land a left hand at the same time, and Poirier's hurt and you can see him staggering. He moves and he walks back along the fence, gets hit with another left hand, and then maybe 15 or 20 seconds later and he's done. The shot that McGregor landed to finish it was kind of an awkward one because it looked like McGregor had kind of closed him down a bit too quickly and Poirier had level changed and McGregor tried to lower the level of the punch and it like cuffed him across the side of the head. But the shot that had landed, you know, 30 seconds earlier was really the one that started it all off. So then we have the rematch. So we have a decent period of time between the two. Of course, we know that both of these guys have developed in this time, but we also know that they're very much established in their games. Like, Poirier's gotten marginally better at what he does. He's gotten more effective at it, and he's gotten defensively better. McGregor, obviously, you know, he's shown good parts of his game. He's shown areas in which, you know, he can be exploited, whether it's over the distance into the later rounds where he does get tired, or obviously, you know, if you're a strong enough grappler to ground him, then, you know, that could be a problem for him as well. But generally, they're both very well-rounded mixed martial artists. So the second time they came together, of course, they've got this previous experience of one another. McGregor comes out, completely abandons everything. First of all, there's a false start, which it gives McGregor the center of the octagon before the fight even starts. Like, at the point where the referee engages them, McGregor's standing on the Monster Energy logo. So Dustin Poirier's already lost half of the octagon. And then he's immediately backed up against the fence. And it was very much the same as the first fight from Poirier's perspective. He moved laterally. He was smart and defensive. And he started working the legs of McGregor. On the flip side, Conor came in and abandoned everything else in his game. He didn't throw any long kicks. He didn't use any tactics to sweep his opponent up against the fence and kind of play with the range. He went straight in, heavy on the lead leg, because he was trying to get Poirier to throw his jab so he could counter with the left hand over the top. And I think McGregor recognizes that there's like a 90-second window at the start of Poirier's fights where he's a little bit more tense and he's a bit more susceptible to getting stung and hurt. So McGregor came out hard. He came out a little bit too hard, and he came out so single-minded in his game plan that it didn't take too much for Poirier to A, figure out what he was doing, and B, stay away from it. And he was able to invest in the leg over and over again. So then when McGregor's left hand wasn't landing, he started to switch to the lead uppercut, which he did land in the first round. But then Poirier made the adjustment and started countering that as well with his right hook. And the benefit of that, with the right hook as well as the calf kick, when he was countering with the right hook, it was knocking McGregor over onto the leg that was already damaged, forcing him to reestablish his weight on it and reminded him of that damage. As soon as the second round starts, McGregor's immediately pressuring, and then he gets caught with one of those low kicks again, and it really buckles his leg. And then it's just a downward spiral from that point. He's pressuring forward, but he can't quite get in range of Poirier. When he comes into range, Poirier's catching his jab, rolling his left hand off his forearm, and then countering his lead uppercut. And this is where McGregor really started to unravel, because the more he kind of based over onto that leg, the more obvious it was that the leg was hurt, the less he could kind of poker face and try and hide it. And as soon as there was that vulnerability that Poirier recognized, he took the center, forced him back against the fence, and then that flurry of Poirier that we're seeing almost every one of his fights, pretty much every finish of his fight. If it doesn't finish with that, it will finish with someone level changing and trying to shoot, like the Brookings fight where he wraps him up in a Darce choke. At that point, that's where Poirier is at his best, because he moves laterally along the fence in a square stance and he loads power punches into every movement that he makes. And with some guys, they've been able to take quite a beat in there. But with McGregor, because he was already fatigued when he arrived at that point and his leg was already hurting him, when the barrage started, he started to fall apart very quickly. And then as he moved along the fence, we saw Poirier do that nice little bounce step and landed a clean right hook on his forehead and he went down. Now, I know there was footage backstage of McGregor in his dressing room watching the fight immediately afterwards. And I know that in that footage that he was icing his leg. And the main thing was the damage to the leg. He was in a lot of pain. And we've seen him, you know, on camera being carried or helped out of places. And there was clearly a lot of the weakening of his game up until the point where he was knocked out was the work on the leg. So that, for me, educates both of these fighters in how they're going to come to this into this fight again, because Poirier is going to know he's going to have to work harder for that low kick if he's going to get it. And McGregor is going to come in either with a good counter for it or with a low kick game of his own, so he can punish Poirier with the same thing that Poirier beat him with. It's a bit of a trick of the ego sometimes with these guys. Like when he fought Cowboy, who's got a record for head kick knockouts, Conor wants to catch him with a head kick and did. So I think McGregor's going to approach this one like he's going to attack that lead leg, and he's going to have counters for Dustin Poirier's lead leg attack as well. But if I think about how they strategically match up this time around, you've got McGregor coming back in with a more clear mind, a more focused mind, like he was in the rematch with Nate Diaz. The first time against Nate Diaz, he was a bit too loose, a bit too relaxed, and he paid for it. He punched himself out and got submitted. In the second Nate Diaz fight, he came out and he was tuned in and he was electric. There was still a limit to the point where he could fight looking sharp, though, and he expended a lot of energy in that first round. But he hurt Diaz a few times, and I feel like if he comes out sharp and focused and giving Poirier the respect that he deserves, like he didn't in the second fight, I think he's going to come out and he's going to work that lead leg, and then he's going to start setting him up for that counter left hand. I think in the process of him backing Poirier up against the fence, though, we're going to see some more of that, those old school openings that we saw from McGregor against, you know, Siver and Brandao, where he comes out and he's got loads of spinning attacks and, you know, flamboyant taekwondo style kicks where he's not really planning on landing any of them. The focus is really to start cutting the octagon off from his opponent, forcing him up against the fence. Like if you imagine both of these fighters have got two paintbrushes, they've got a broad stroke paintbrush, and the broad stroke paintbrush for McGregor is those big sweeping kicks that really force people back up against the fence. And then once he's got them there, then we've got that hop sidekick to the lead leg and to the body. We saw that against Eddie Alvarez. We saw that against Dennis Siver as well. And then we've got the front kicks to the midsection, like he used against Chad Mendes. Now, they are going to be more difficult to land because this is southpaw to southpaw. It doesn't mean he can't use them. I just think the hop sidekick will be more valuable to him. But that's also a good counter for the calf kick, because it turns your body into a position where the lead leg's not quite as vulnerable. So I think there are a few things that McGregor can do to get himself into punching range without walking himself in and taking a bunch of kicks. I think for Poirier, if he comes out with the same game plan, like he's going to try and kick his leg to pieces and then, you know, turn the fight on him and stop him, I think that would be reckless of Poirier. I think he's going to have to be more creative. I don't think he needs to be too creative past the second round, though, because I think he knows that even if he has a rough first round, a rough second round, he's got three more rounds to put a beating on McGregor, and he's got the conditioning and the pace to do it. And that's where McGregor starts to fall apart, is when he's pushed past that sort of 7 or 8 minute limit where he's fresh and he's strong and he's powerful, and then immediately it's like he falls off a cliff. And even in the Nate Diaz fight where it went five rounds, there were still big portions of that fight where he just looked completely spent. And if I'm Poirier, I'm looking at those moments and I'm thinking they're the moments that I win. You know, I can draw the other moments in the fight as neutral. But unfortunately for McGregor, he's got 7 minutes of conditioning in a 25-minute window. He doesn't have enough stay in power, to make it hard work for Poirier all the way through. And, you know, you think back to Poirier when he faced Max Holloway. Max Holloway sets the precedent for pace. And Poirier put a pace on Max Holloway in the first round that he couldn't keep up with. I mean, it was, I've got it written down here. 115 shots thrown, 54 landed in Poirier against Holloway in the first round. And I'll give you a comparison of that, because McGregor against Diaz won. McGregor landed 28 of 74. McGregor Diaz 2, he landed 34 of 58. And against Alvarez in the first round, he landed 32 of 84. So even with 84 punches and 32 landed, he's still nowhere near Poirier against Holloway. And that first round, it was, he blitzed him in the first round. And the combinations were, you know, 10, 15 punches before something came back that he had to slip before he then went on to the next 10-punch combination. I mean, it was an onslaught. It was amazing that Max Holloway got out of that round. But the thing that started it off was the broad brushstroke of Poirier. It was the catch-all shift that he does. So he's a southpaw, but then he pitches that left hand over the top with no intention of landing it, knowing full well his opponent's going to move back. And when McGregor's in a southpaw stance and he's moving away, he moves back in a southpaw stance. When Poirier's moving forward, he steps through from southpaw to orthodox to southpaw. So he covers so much more distance than McGregor's able to with his single stance. And because that's coupled on top of, you know, with his striking as well. So imagine he's in a southpaw stance. He's going to come over the top with his big power shot, and then he's going to shift through and throw the right hand as a second power punch from an orthodox stance. If he doesn't want to throw the punch, he can throw a kick on the end. And he was doing that against Cub Swanson. He did it against Holloway a bunch of times. So him traveling forward at a pace that's going to make McGregor uncomfortable, they're his broad brushstrokes. Because what's interesting about this fight is that both of these guys, they like to fight their opponent into the fence. They like to be the hammer that's nailing their opponent up against the fence where they can keep them to deal with their best weapons. Now, Poirier's best weapons are standing square to you and throwing a barrage of punches, and McGregor's standing long and landing precision punches to drop you. It's very, very different, but they occupy the same space. One thing I will say for McGregor as well, though, and if you look back to his UFC debut against Brimage, if he decides to counterpunch when he's not tired, he's lethal. But most of the time, he likes to be aggressively counterpunching on the front foot, controlling the center. Against Marcus Brimage, he allowed him to move towards him, and he kept nailing him with that uppercut through the center. If you think Dustin Poirier comes in and stands square and starts ducking his shoulders and bringing his arms up to guard from the sides, that uppercut, the center from McGregor, might be perfect, but he's got to be delivering it when he's fresh, because if he's under pressure, it's one shot to 10 from Poirier in these combinations, and they're just not odds that McGregor will win. He'll always get overwhelmed in those circumstances. Okay. So once Poirier's got him backed up against the fence, and this is where, as I'm recording these war rooms over these months, I've been working on lessons of war in the background, and I'm trying to get this MMA system together as a style in itself, because it is now. You know, we know what the high percentage moves are in MMA, and we know how to stack them on top of one another to go from high percentage to low percentage. If we look at both of these fighters and what they bring to the table, they occupy the same space. They're opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to pace. I think McGregor's the one that's got the power. I think Poirier's the one that's got the volume. I think Poirier does his best work when he's forcing his opponent up against the fence when he's in a square stance. And I think McGregor does his best work when he's got his opponent backed up against the fence in a long stance. I think McGregor's in and out movement's excellent. I think Poirier's lateral movement's excellent. I think Poirier's got good movement moving forward, but he's got to be throwing as he's doing it. McGregor can be moving forward and making you feel like something's happening, which is enough to shut most of his opponents down. So if you look at the best attributes of these fighters and how they come together, one of them has to win the center control. Otherwise, one of them's going to be forced to counterpunch, and neither of them like to do that. Poirier doesn't do counterpunching very well. he loses rounds going backwards if he's forced in that direction. Not that he's not dangerous, but he's not as calculated moving backwards as he is moving forwards. We've seen at times in McGregor's game that he can be very calculated moving back and he can be lethal. I mean, even, you know, even the Aldo knockout was a counterpunch. Just because he moved back, you know, a step and a half, it doesn't mean he wasn't moving back when the punch was delivered. And there are a few of those occasions, even in the Nate Diaz fight, where Diaz walks into the center all confident and McGregor just jams him with a short left as he's coming in. He's very good at utilizing people's forward momentum. But that's where the tidal wave overwhelms the, you know, the one strong guy standing there ready to withstand the force. You just can't do it with the volume that Poirier throws. You've got to land that first shot, otherwise you're going to get barreled over. So if you think about those exchanges, if you think about those points where either Poirier is backed up against the fence and McGregor's pressing him, or Poirier's backed up against the fence and McGregor's being pressed, they look very different. Even though they're switching roles and they're occupying that same space, they're trying to aggress onto their opponent into the fence, their tactical approach is very different. And they present, going back to the lessons of war thing, the MMA stance is a spectrum. The main stance in the middle is somewhere between Poirier and McGregor. But the extremes of both of their stances is opposite ends of the spectrum, because you've got McGregor who's standing really long, which I call chaser. And then you've got Poirier who's standing really wide, which I call broadside. And I use them with because it's a naval connection. If a galleon is chasing, it's using the smaller caliber cannons at the front and it's got a longer range on those cannons. So they've got to be accurate, but they've got more ability to hit from a distance, which is where McGregor's at. Poirier, on the flip side, he stands broadside, he stands square. And the reason that a battleship, a galleon, would position themselves in that direction in front of an opponent is because they can then use that whole battery of cannons. It puts them in a very powerful position where they can generate so much firepower into their opponents, but the danger is that they're broadside, so they're also vulnerable to the firepower returning. I think once Poirier's got through that stage of McGregor's game where he's no longer standing long, I think then Poirier's all over him. And then he's going to be forcing McGregor to cover and to level change and to do things out of panic that he doesn't want to do. And then if McGregor does level change, he's going into a submission game, which is not as strong as Nate Diaz, but the fatigue coupled with the good DOS jokes of Dustin Poirier is not a good mix for McGregor. So I think if he does feel like he's going to end up backed up against the fence at some point, maybe allow Poirier to come to him when he's still fresh. Work that lead leg, give some variety to his game so he's not so entirely focused on that left hand. And for Poirier, he's got to move forward undercover. He's got to throw mortars over the top while he's tunneling underneath, because if he just moves forward against McGregor, he's going to get picked off on the way. But if he moves forward with a game plan, with an attack that McGregor's got to think about, that's a different thing. The battle for the center is going to be the key. And that's really where it gets interesting. And I think that if McGregor wins the battle in the early rounds, he's got the potential to knock Poirier out into the middle of the second round. I think even if Poirier loses the center, he could still win this fight over the championship rounds, over the distance, because he'll get stronger third, fourth, and fifth. If Poirier wins the battle of the center in the first round, he's potentially going to be walking onto a power punch of McGregor's, because he's being set up, because McGregor's not going to allow him to control the center. And the one other thing I will say is that Poirier grounded him 30 seconds into the second fight. McGregor's not going to be taken down just as easily the next time around. He was taken down in the second fight because he was so focused on his own game plan, his left hand, he completely disregarded the potential for a takedown. His takedown defense is still very good. I think if Poirier works for a takedown, he might not get it, but the benefit is making McGregor work. I think that's the game plan for the first round and a half for Poirier. Stay away from the left hand, make him work as much as possible, and don't fight out of emotion. For McGregor, I feel like there's a lot on the line for him. I feel like this pressure coming into this one, unlike other fights of his. You know, there was pressure coming into the Nate Diaz fight because he'd already lost to Nate Diaz, and if he lost a second time to the same guy, his brand would be diminished. this is a rubber match. This is the trilogy. There is no coming back from this, I don't think, if he loses here, unless it's a controversial one. If Poirier stops him a second time, Conor McGregor is now, you know, he's now there for super fights. He's no longer in the running for a title shot. But it's also damaging to his brand and to everything that he applies his brand to, whether that's whiskey or sneakers or diet plans or whatever. Pressure coming in in this one is on McGregor's shoulders. Poirier's picked himself up before and he's carried himself back to the top. I think he shows up and tries to do his job best he can. I think the wild card is how McGregor shows up and what his preparation's been like. I'm leaning towards McGregor, but not out of any logical mind. I think if they fought 10 times, I think Poirier probably wins 60 or 70% of them, just purely because of the margins for Conor to win are slimmer the longer the fight goes. And I think Poirier is smart enough and durable enough to be able to stay away from the left hand of McGregor most of the time. But there's something about this one that's kind of leaning me in McGregor's direction. He's a big game fighter. You know, when the stakes are the highest, when he's backed into a corner, when you don't think he's going to possibly be able to do this, he's one of those guys that can kind of pull it out the bag. He's a star player for a reason. There's a reason that people tune in to watch his fights. And unfortunately for Poirier, even if he beats McGregor here, he doesn't take on McGregor's status as a pay-per-view superstar. Dustin's here to do a job and to show that McGregor's not the fighter that he is. And McGregor's here to remind us all of what he's capable of and the fact that he is the pay-per-view king. I'm absolutely buzzing for this one. I'll see you next time.